All right. My name is Athena Holbrook. I'm 30 years old, and today is August 18th, 2018. I'm here in the New York City CWA office with Maida Rosenstein, who is the president of UAW Local 2110, who represent my union, MoMA Local 2110, PASTA, which stands for the Professional and Administrative Staff Association.
And my name is Maida Rosenstein, and it's August 18th, 2018. And I am here with Athena Holbrook, who is a bargaining committee member of the MoMA Local 2110 negotiating committee that just won a successful contract. And so we are sisters in the same union, which is Local 2110 of the United Auto Workers Union, a technical office and professional union, and I'm the president.
So Maida, you've been working with MoMA union members for a number of years now, and I'm curious to know how you got involved initially in union organizing, but specifically in arts and cultural heritage organizations.
Well, I actually was a clerical worker at Columbia University in the 80s, and we organized a union there, and it was a tremendously transformative experience for us, and we had a huge fight with the university. It took years to organize because of their opposition to the union. You know, they dragged out things before we could have an election, and they ran a very divisive anti-union campaign. But ultimately, we were able to successfully organize, and I found that it was the thing that was the most important thing in my life, the most meaningful thing in my life, and there was an opportunity to go on the staff of the union, which at that time was called District 65. It was our predecessor union, and become an organizer. And District 65 was a unique union, and they had been organizing among white collar workers, people that were often left out of the labor movement for years, and that included the Museum of Modern Art, which had organized workers there. PASTA had organized independently in the 70s and then had affiliated with District 65. So when I started working as a full-time organizer, you know, that was my first encounter with the workers at MoMA, and I sat in on negotiations with a more experienced negotiator, you know, back in the 80s, and was really amazed at how those negotiations proceeded. And learned a little bit more about the issues that at MoMA. And one thing that was very extraordinary to me about the bargaining unit that I still find extraordinary is that it's such a range of job classification. So everybody from retail workers to librarians and archivists and curators to the people who work in visitor services. That was very unique.
And so in the year 2000, MoMA had a notorious strike that lasted for 134 days. It's really incredible, really incredible moment. And you mentioned kind of earlier than that, you had participated in negotiations and learned about the issues that were going on at MoMA. So what were some of the issues that that were happening at MoMA that led to that strike in 2000?
Well, that was really amazing, and that was another watershed moment for me as a union person, because there was an open shop at MoMA, meaning that people were not obligated to join the union or pay agency fees. There was its own little right to work at at MoMA. And it had come about because, you know, it was very extraordinary in the 70s for museum workers to organize. The museum convinced the union leadership then that it would be undemocratic to require everybody to join the union. And people bought into it because unionization was new and it was the 70s and people believed that everybody would just, you know, be able to maintain the union just through their, you know, excitement about the original organizing. What we found over the years was that open shop was used very effectively by management to divide people and to keep people from really building a strong union. Management played the, you know, the sort of classist card or the elite card, saying to people, well, you don't want to be in a union that forces union membership, because then you will be like factory workers, and you are not factory workers. You are, like professionals who need to make your individual choices. But it really undercut our collective bargaining power and our resources, because people would come in and not get it. So that was a big issue, and we decided to take it on in these negotiations in a real way. The museum also had come in and they wanted to, and it was very much in line with their approach. They wanted to implement changes in the health benefits, and in particular they wanted us to cede the right to bargain over health benefits over the life of the contract, so that they would be able to change health benefits at any time if they change them for the non-union employees. Of course, they were, as they always are, very tough in the wage negotiations. It was a very, very aggressive negotiations. It was taking place at the same time as the museum was trying to expand its first expansion. The director at that time was new to the museum, and they took an extremely aggressive stance in negotiations. We felt we had to fight back, and that we were going to have to go further than had happened in the past. And so we started talking to people about striking. And, you know, the people felt that there, you know, people from the outside told us, well, it's not going to be possible to strike. You have an open shop. You know, you're never going to be able to pull off a strike in that kind of setting. And we did, and it was very, very difficult. But the issues were really compelling to people. Organized very, very carefully and on the ground, almost like you would in a new organizing campaign, with, you know, very intensive one-on-one discussions with people and small meetings, and really pushing people and to move on these issues. And so ultimately we won a strike vote, and people went out on strike. And it was a very tough strike in that it was long, but it was also incredible. And everything about MoMA and the workplace actually helped us in the strike. The tremendous work ethic that exists among MoMA workers helped us in the strike, because people were very serious and responsible about it. People were very creative and carried on so many activities over the 4.5 months of the strike. There was a committee that, did stuff for the picket lines, just sort of like do visuals for the picket lines. And they had an exhibition of MoMA's dirty laundry, and they, brought, they designed like a, you know, they hung out all the, you know, all kinds of visual symbols mm-hmm. of what MoMA was doing. And that was just one. That was just one example, and we became, you know, we did get a lot of press attention because it was the Museum of Modern Art, and it was, you know, museum workers on strike, and so, you know. We got a lot of attention that way. Tourists, we had the rat out there in mm-hmm. front of the museum, and we would have tourists from all over the world come, and they would want to pose at the picket line. And we became sort of a cultural phenomenon, things to see in New York over the summer. One of them was the picket line at MoMA, which was silly, but it was very annoying mm-hmm. to the museum. We did 24-hour picketing, though. It was not lightweight stuff. We, you know, the museum was having this expansion, and so people actually, at one point, they were moving a statue from the garden, and they had to have a crane come and, you know, lift the statue at 3 in the morning. The crane operator was union, and really a good unionist, too, and he said, if you have a picket line there, I am going to drive away. So we had a picket line at 3 o'clock in the morning at the Garden of the Museum, and the crane came, the driver came, and then he just turned around and left. So we had some extraordinary solidarity go on as well.
That's amazing.
Yeah, it really was amazing.
Well, and there were some really wonderful slogans as well from that strike that have carried over into the present. So, of course, Modern Art, Ancient Wages.
That is even older than that.
Is it really?
We shouldn't take credit for that art strike. That was like an original pasta mm-hmm. slogan from the 70s.
Well, holding
you
out.
Know,
we used it in this one as well.
Really, yes.
Yeah.
And it really holds up.
It does. And, you know, something that I've been thinking about and talking about with other people who are going through negotiations at the moment is burnout, or the exhaustion that comes from these prolonged periods of bargaining or striking, as in the case at MoMA in 2000. And what kind of strategies in 2000 did you guys use to kind of keep up the energy and get people to come out every day for 134 days?
Well, I mean, it was obviously tough. I mean, we had to be kind of relentless about it, and like picketing every day, you know, has a lot of boring periods. But first of all, you know, the solidarity really sustains you. Solidarity and comradeship and, you know, people being together really sustains people. I mean, an amazing byproduct of the strike was that people at MoMA who really didn't know each other got to know each other. And like people from the stores, knowing people from the, you know, from the library or from the curatorial staff, you know, actually interacting and knowing each other as human beings. And it was a very egalitarian mm-hmm. and democratizing experience as well. And people got a lot out of that. So we had these, we tried to structure that in. We tried to have events that took us through the strike at regular intervals. We couldn't do it every day. We didn't try to, but, you know, like a rallies, you know, every other week or every week, which would have, or an event that we would, you know, coalesce around to keep people going. We had a weekly membership meeting in which people could come in and everybody was allowed to vent and do what they felt they needed to do. You know, also, you know, there was a union. There was a larger union. So we had, you know, we're lucky in the UAW, we have a strike fund. And so there were strike fund benefits. We're lucky in New York that strikers who are out can actually collect unemployment after unemployment benefits after a certain period of time. So people, there was access to, people had to some funds. And starving people from out of a strike is, you know, one of the biggest threats. And so that helped a lot, you know. And again, people we had to keep reminding people, and people reminded each other of the importance of the issues that we were fighting for. And at some point, you know, everybody dug in and said, this is important. We're out here. We're staying out until it's done.
I really like what you said about the kind of solidarity building across the museum with all of these different departments, because that was definitely something that I experienced in these negotiations with the museum this year, where, you know, I was my first time on the bargaining committee with an incredible team of MoMA staff from all different departments as well, and, you know, through that, getting to meet people at the museum who I'd never spoken to before, and that was really incredible. And I think also, you know, our contract negotiations this time lasted for 4.5 months, and I think towards the end there, people were exhausted and really looking for an outlet to kind of come together and regain some of that energy. And when we did the walkout, where the museum employees on August 6th last week left their posts and their desks to meet in the museum lobby and chant and sing Solidarity Forever and let the museum know that we're united in this fight, it was an incredible moment. And I was, you know, it was the feeling of solidarity and the feeling of, like, this huge rise in energy was just palpable. And I don't think I'd ever felt anything like that before, and certainly not at my job. And to me, that is the moment when I really understood what collective action is and kind of the power of a union. And I can only imagine that being on strike for 134 days and doing that collectively with your colleagues every day would be a really powerful and empowering experience.
It was. It was very difficult, but it was, I think, really empowering. But the action that the August 6th action was empowering too, and I was so, it reminded me of, you know, of everything that led me to want to be part of a union to begin with, and, you know, I was very proud to be associated with it in any way. And your committee, the bargaining committee at MoMA, was so great to work with. I mean, there was such great comradeship between people on that committee, and I was very struck by the fact that the committee was mostly women and mostly younger women. There were great men too, also, but that to me was very striking, the no pun intended, but you know, because I thought there was such great comradeship, and I felt very invigorated by seeing a group of young women, very extraordinary, very thoughtful, really fighting hard, really asserting their leadership, and very supportive of each other. And it was really inspiring, you know, and made me feel really good, especially in the age of Trump, mm-hmm. where it's easy to feel crushed. You know, it gave me a lot of hope for the labor movement.
That's good to hear. It makes me feel good. Thank you. You know, and I was really struck by the participation of everyone in the membership in our union at MoMA as well. I mean, people really stepped up, not just in these kind of larger actions that we had. So the August 6th walkout, and then we had a what we called a party on the pavement picket outside of MoMA's annual Party in the Garden fundraiser back in May. And we had a ton of people show up to picket with us there. But also every week having our members show up to leaflet outside of openings, outside of the Free Fridays, outside of membership events, just really dedicating so much time so consistently for 4.5 months was really incredible. And it makes me feel really confident and excited to kind of continue organizing beyond just the negotiations.
Right.
So, you know, we won a contract this week that I think we're all very proud of, and it's a 5-year contract, so we won't be going back to bargaining until then, but there's still so much to do between now and then, and I feel really confident that our membership is engaged and ready to kind of continue doing the work at the museum, but also I think outside of the museum as well. We have a lot of other art workers in the world right now who are either in their own process of negotiations or who are trying to organize. And we have StoryCorps as well, who are have been in bargaining for 9 months now and really need the support of all of us in the labor movement.
Yes, and that's very inspiring too, when people come out of negotiations feeling like they want to do more. There's something to be said for being relentless about this, you know, like we're in these days of instant gratification, you know, in the union movement, you know, that's not going to be possible. And but it's very sweet to win after you've worked hard for a long time.
Yeah.
So.
I was wondering if you have any other specific stories of when you really felt that sense of solidarity. I know especially you had talked about working with Columbia and other moments.
Yeah. Well, I think, you know, it's, you know, negotiations always, like union negotiations always represent that opportunity to have that kind of solidarity. You know, feeling of collective power. And I think where, you know, where you work through something or you fight for something and you win it together as a group, there's nothing like that experience, because you came up against adversity, you worked together and you fought and you won it and you overcame, and that is a amazing, you know, that is an amazing experience and an amazing lesson, because you realize that truly by working together you can actually move mountains. And so it was, you know, it was a very, I mean, this last negotiations was at MoMA. I think that happened because the bargaining committee just stayed with it, worked together, you know, went back to the membership, and people stayed with it, and we were able to, you know, really move the museum in its position. So, and that is when negotiations really work, you know.
Are there any specific lessons you've learned from organizing and working within, like, arts organizations, and especially nonprofit organizations?
Well, I think, you know, first of all, there's nonprofits and there's nonprofits. I mean, MoMA is not a, MoMA is a nonprofit, but it's a very wealthy institution, and, you know, with a priceless collection and many, many resources and, you know, very prestigious standing. And that's certainly different than, you know, we represent people at the Bronx Museum of the Arts, which is a much smaller institution with less resources. So I find, you know, all nonprofits and arts institutions cite their mission. You're supposed to be working at the place for the love of the place, not to do something so crass as make money. And they, you know, and those places, you know, they play the guilt card really, really successfully. Or the prestige card in the case of an institution like MoMA, where you're not only supposed to love it, but you're supposed to feel extremely honored that you were selected to move there, and you know, and that's an argument at the bargaining table for people taking less, always, or for accepting less, you know, that, you know, has resonance with people, and And you have to fight hard against it. And the truth is that our members who work in these institutions do feel like that. I mean, people who work at MoMA are very dedicated to the work they do. They do feel like it's important, and they are there for things other than just getting rich. So all of that, there's truth to all of that. And it's hard to balance that against your own needs. But the top people at these institutions often put that argument aside mm-hmm. when it comes to their own salaries, because they want to make what is comparable to somebody in the for-profit sector.
Yeah, it's interesting because you always expect, the management to be kind of gaslighting you as a worker into thinking that you should accept less. But I think what's really interesting in the art world is that it's kind of the entire art world that's doing that. And it's you as well, all of us who we're all enamored with the art that we're working with and the institutions that we're working in, because many of us, I think, have dreamed of working at MoMA for much of our lives. And so, it's you expect to have to fight against management who are telling you to accept less, but it's really difficult to be doing that while also fighting against yourself and your own kind of belief that you should feel lucky to be around this artwork, that you should feel honored to work at this prestigious institution. And I think it's been difficult to kind of reconcile that. But through this process, I've really come to solidly understand that it is a privilege, absolutely, to work at MoMA and to be able to do something I'm passionate about. But it's also that doesn't mean that I should accept that as payment, right? Passion is wonderful, but passion is not payment.
Exactly. And there's no reason why you can't have reasonable terms and conditions of employment in institutions like MoMA that have the resources to do it, and share the wealth.
Yeah.
So before we wrap up, I was just wondering if you had could maybe share what being part of unionizing and organizing has brought to your life, like the main lessons that you've taken away from being part of the labor movement in this way.
I mean, organizing when I got into this through organizing my workplace, it was just transformative because it came, first of all, it just brought all my beliefs together with an ability to actually in a very practical way do something that helped me and that helped my coworkers, and that sort of put everything in place. And I thought seeing the world through the lens of workers, labor unions, and being part of it made so much sense to me as a woman, in terms of my beliefs in equality and democracy and fairness and justice. And it was very real and very practical because you could actually do something that changed things and changed people. It's been, I feel like I've been very lucky to be involved in the union movement and to have been able to do something that I believed in, for the last 30 years, so.
Well, it's funny because I was thinking about how museums, art museums in general, I think, but to speak to MoMA specifically, historically it has been kind of siloed in terms of the departments and specifically in terms of the curatorial departments, historically having galleries dedicated to certain curatorial departments. And in the past few years, MoMA's really been trying to break down that kind of siloed system and have the curatorial departments collaborate more on exhibitions that feature all kinds of different, you know, artworks from many different mediums. And you know, that's kind of the main mission of this new exhibition strategy moving forward. And what's so funny to me is through this union organizing, through the negotiations, and you know, having to connect with everyone at the museum throughout all of these departments, I've actually had more of an experience of kind of getting beyond those siloed departments than I have in kind of the day-to-day work of that we do there. And so it's really amazing, because we as the workers at the museum are actually, through unionizing, implementing this very mission of collaboration and of kind of breaking down these barriers that separate, as Maida, you were saying earlier, that separate curatorial departments from retail, from visitor engagement, you know, from conservation. And I it's been really wonderful to get to know most of my colleagues now. So I think that for me has been probably the most powerful thing that has come about through this. Yeah.
Do you have any final thoughts to share with one another before we wrap up?
Well, I mean, I just that I think I still believe organizing unions is an incredibly important thing to be doing today. And I know the union movement's being pushed back with the Janus decision, you know, but the fact is that I think that workers organizing in their workplace is still the most incredibly important way to connect people to, you know, changing, you know, fighting for justice generally in this country. And it is what we have to do if we want to transform things in this country, you know, in a larger and more sustained way. We need to rebuild our labor movement, and I think the possibilities are there, because there's tremendous dissatisfaction out there in the workplace with what people are facing. There's a huge, you know, just the income inequality that plays out, the lack of health benefits for people. I mean, and you know, we have to address it politically, but we really need to organize as well. And so I think the people, the younger people who've been involved in organizing, I think it's just a fantastic, you know, fantastic response to what's happening.